Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Hello again, everybody. This morning, we're seeing one of the best economic reports in a long time, some of the best economic news in many months. The unemployment rate dropped to 8.3% in January, down 0.3%, as nearly a quarter of a million new jobs were created in January. So here's one question we're going to ask now. How much does this mean President Obama's stimulus plan worked? With us now is the author of the most thorough and balanced assessment I have seen of President Obama's nearly $1 trillion stimulus bill, his original sin as far as conservatives are concerned, a signature policy that the president will have to defend running for reelection. With me now is Michael Graybell, reporter for the news organization ProPublica and author of a brand new book called Money Well Spent, The Truth Behind the $1 trillion Stimulus, the biggest economic recovery plan in history. Hi, Michael. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you again.
First on that subtitle, it being the biggest economic recovery plan in history, we usually think of the New Deal as being that in the 1930s. Was this bigger than the New Deal?
Well, it was bigger than the WPA. It was actually five times bigger than the WPA when you adjust for inflation. And if you think about all these big things in history, like the moon race, the Manhattan Project, the Marshall Plan to rebuild Europe after World War II, the stimulus was bigger than all of these things.
Bigger than the Marshall Plan.
That's right.
The cliche that people are, we need a Marshall Plan for this and such.
So this was bigger than that. And I think what's strange, though, is that it's been difficult for the public to know what to make of the stimulus plan. They've heard various different things from Republicans and Democrats, completely different. And so my goal in the book was to get out of the politics and really follow the money across the country and see how the money was really spent and how the middle class workers were affected and not affected by the plan.
So let's get into the teeth of that. You list successes and failures. We'll contrast a few here. Economists estimated that it created or saved 2 to 3 million jobs, and that without it, the unemployment rate would have reached 12% and still be in double digits today, rather than the 8.3 that was reported this morning. But it did nothing to bring about a strong, sustainable recovery, they say. So how do we hold those truths together to judge the stimulus a success or a failure?
Right. So when the administration was promoting the plan, they talked about, drop kicking us out of the recession, jobs, created immediately and seeing the immediate effects of this. And so that rhetoric didn't really live up to the promise that people expected. I think if the administration said we pass a stimulus plan and 3 years from now we will have 8.3% unemployment rate, they would have had a really tough time passing the package. We're certainly seeing a lot of positive signs in the report today, but there still are 13 million people unemployed, 11 million more who are underemployed. So we still have a deep, deep hole to get out of.
Indeed. And at 2 to 3 million jobs, if that's what the stimulus can be credited with, how much is that per job if we spent $1 trillion?
It's a lot of money. And it's an interesting question. There's still some more money, almost $100 billion that's still going to be spent in things like broadband and electronic health records, high-speed rail in California, if that ever happens. So there's still some of these long-term investments that are working their way through the system.
The term jobs created or saved, that's what we always hear, 2 to 3 million jobs created or saved. And Obama himself always said created or saved. I think the first wave of promotion on it about shovel-ready projects made it sound like they were going to create millions of jobs and make permanent infrastructure improvements in the bargain, mostly with new jobs, very New Deal. But it turned out to be a lot of money to state and local governments to save teachers and police officers and other local government jobs. 14,000 teachers in New York City not laid off because of the stimulus bill is your number. But did that change it from an investment to a Band-Aid?
There was a little bit of all of these things. The real struggle, I think, for the administration is that more than $500 billion of the stimulus money, the vast majority, was almost invisible. Spent in things like food stamps, unemployment benefits, tax cuts, keeping teachers in classrooms, as you say. These things, so the food stamps and all these things lead to indirect jobs, ultimately to grocery store clerks. The Medicaid money leads to keep nurses employed and not turn away people when they need the help. But it was very difficult for the public to see this. If a teacher was in the classroom because of the stimulus money, the administration didn't get any credit for that. That was my teacher. She's always been there. So the administration did a very poor job explaining these things to the public, focusing a lot on these shovel-ready projects, which, as you know, took 6 months to a year to really get going where we could see infrastructure projects. So they got this negative press where people were expecting to see the shovels immediately, and we came back and said, where's the project? I see a sign, but no project.
Yeah. So another success that you cite with respect to projects is that it was the largest clean energy bill in history. And it did make real improvements in the nation's infrastructure, according to your numbers. 41,000 miles of paved roads, 600,000 low-income homes weatherized, 3,000 rural schools connected to the internet, and the largest clean energy bill in history. But I don't think the public has those numbers at hand or has the impression of the stimulus as having done all that.
Right. The money was spread far and wide, so you do have these very large numbers. In New York, I'll give you a few examples of projects and some of the money that was spent. $79 million to help the Second Avenue subway get going, $500 million for the Fulton Street Transit Center, $195 million to connect Long Island Railroad to Grand Central Terminal, on and on, Staten Island Ferry, Atlantic Avenue Viaduct, the Ellis Island Seawall, the Brooklyn Bridge is being repainted. All of these things got some stimulus money. But I don't think the public sees these as stimulus projects because they either existed or had been on the planning books for years.
And on the largest clean energy bill in history, that tag, how do you measure that, first of all?
Right. So, Obama came in talking about, really the first president in a long, long time since Jimmy Carter to really embrace clean energy. And we do have brand new solar farms. Being built out in the desert. We have the world's largest wind farm. We have a battery industry in the U.S. for the electric car. The electric car is something we're talking about a lot now. And a lot of these companies who built these plants told me if it wasn't for the stimulus, we would have been building these plants overseas. So the administration could really claim a lot of credit for the battery industry in the U.S. But the real question is, will it last?
Listeners, how did the stimulus touch your life? If you had any personal contact with the so-called stimulus bill, what was the technical name again?
The American Recovery and Reinvestment Act.
The original big thing that President Obama came into office with when we were in the height of the crisis at the beginning of 2009, even before health care reform got going. If this touched your life in any way, pro or con, give us a call. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Michael Graybell from ProPublica, who has written the book Money Well Spent, The Truth Behind the $1 trillion Stimulus, the biggest economic recovery plan in history. And of course, on it being the largest clean energy bill, the failed solar energy company Solyndra, that Republicans claim got stimulus money as a political payback before it went out of business, has become sort of the poster child of that clean energy program.
Right, right. In the book, I go inside the Solyndra factory, and I've got a real great story to tell here about a worker there named Mario Mendez who was laid off at an auto plant called NUMMI in Fremont, California, the same area where Solyndra was. And he was essentially, if you give me a second to tell the story, he was essentially a tug driver who brought parts to assembly line. Solyndra inside the plant had these singing robots that they had moving along a magnetic guideway in the floor, and they were essentially doing the same job as Mario Mendez was doing. But the plan with the stimulus money was to actually replace these robots with a more automated assembly line. So it's a really interesting story about whether the green economy will really be providing great manufacturing jobs like we saw in the past.
Obviously, that was not money well spent on Solyndra, but was it political or seen as a good investment that just went bad?
The real story about Solyndra is not the politics. People keep pointing to George Kaiser, this fundraiser who got, crony capitalism. The real story was an administration that was overeager, perhaps, to have a clean energy success story within the first few months of the administration. And so they let that excitement and that desire to have a poster child really get ahead of where the market was going for these solar panels.
By the way, I just did the math. I pulled up my computer's calculator and divided 2.5 million jobs into $1 trillion, and that comes to 500,000. So it costs $500,000 per job if we spent $1 trillion on the stimulus and came up with 2.5 million new jobs. Is that money well spent?
It's certainly a lot of money. It raises questions about whether the administration could have done it better. There's been a lot of talk about why didn't we have another WPA with direct hiring. Looking at the lessons that are in this book and the lessons of the stimulus plan, hopefully now we can now say these are the programs that will create jobs very quickly and not cost a lot of money. You know, that's something that I think we should all be taking a step back and using this as a lesson to figure out what do we do next if we do have another recession.
Michael in Norwalk, you're on WNYC. Hello, Michael. Michael, are you there? Michael, try one more time. I think you're back there somewhere. Okay, I guess we lost Michael. Well, we'll go to another call in a minute. Politically, you conclude that the president learned some lessons for his more recent jobs bill. Bring your own bill to Congress. Don't announce how many jobs it will create. And highlight the people whose jobs will be saved, like that story you just told, rather than projects. Yes?
Right, right. The American Jobs Act was, you know, which they pitched back in the fall of last year. I think the administration learned some of these lessons. One of the biggest problems I heard a lot from Republicans and Democrats was that the administration only gave them guides. It didn't really give them the programs that, you know, an exact bill. So the Republicans saw Obama as this uniter, as somebody who would be bipartisan with them. But then in reality, they were dealing with David Obey and Nancy Pelosi, who were writing their bill on their own, putting in programs that Democrats had supported, and not having these discussions with the Republicans, who at the time did support a stimulus bill. Mitt Romney supported a stimulus bill. John McCain supported a stimulus bill. But it was this stimulus bill that got people so angry. And really, you know, I write in the book, make the argument that it really created the Tea Party.
Let's hear from some listeners as to how the stimulus bill touched their lives. Robert in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how are you? Good morning, Brian. And thank you for having this program. I wanted to illustrate two things that were impacted my family and my employment. One is that I recently took advantage of the program that was put out by the administration to reduce interest rate, and we saved, our household saved 33% per month on the refinancing of our mortgage. And secondly, I'm involved in affordable housing, and I've seen throughout New York in particular how the weatherization program has drastically improved the operations for buildings that are for affordable for individuals who live in affordable housing. And more importantly, when the credit crunch hit in the fall of 2008, it sent many of the prospective projects, you know, reeling, because the investment that we relied on from the private sector literally dried up at, you know, September 2008. I can point to the exact time and place. And the program that that was put in place shortly thereafter, and beginning in 2009, really jump-started the whole industry again. So in those two points, I've seen it both from, you know, my employment and also my household. It's had a tremendous impact, and 33% savings on our household expenses has been huge.
Thank you very much for your call. Nick in Passaic, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nick.
Hi. I'm calling about from I'm a tenant in a home in New Jersey, and I think the owner received some of the benefits of possibly weatherization and maybe a more energy-efficient refrigerator, a couple of things like that. And I'm wondering if he probably would have gone out and bought some of that, done some of that on his own. I don't know if it was necessary he probably took advantage of it because the government was offering, but he probably would have done it on his own. So I don't know if it was a good idea to have.
It's a great question, and it's one of the unanswerables, I guess, which is how much would some of the things that people did because they were subsidized by the stimulus bill, how much would they have done anyway? I know people ask that about the Cash for Clunkers program, which I think you rate very well in this book. But some economists say, look, all that did was push up by a few months car purchases that people were going to have to make anyway because their cars were dying.
Right. The exact example that he's talking about, you know, this Cash for Clunkers, essentially. Economists have looked at this and said, you know, within this program happened in the summer of 2009, and by early 2010, the economists say those sales would have happened anyway. But there is a tremendous benefit in pulling those sales forward and saying when we need this big boost in the summer of 2009, when we were still marching on our way toward 10% unemployment rate, these sales, you know, were very helpful. One thing we saw is that dealer lots were completely wiped out and empty all of a sudden, when before it was sleepy at these dealerships. And what happened was, as a result, manufacturers needed to replace the stock and started calling back thousands of auto workers who had been laid off back into the plants to get going again.
And yet, ultimately, you conclude that the stimulus bill failed to live up to its promise because it was poorly designed. And you say one way to have improved it would have been to divide the bill into emergency relief, like saving cops and teachers' jobs, and a separate bill for the longer-term investments. Do you think that really would have stopped the firestorm of criticism, or were Republicans just poised to say no, no, no to anything this, at that time, popular new president came up with?
Well, we'll never know. What I have been told, though, and in looking back at the record, there were Republicans who wanted to work with the administration on a more bipartisan bill, and it might not have had taken a lot of work to get there. The one former White House advisor told me that, you know, you have this bill that's very lean. People understand what it is. The president comes out there and says, "I cut your taxes. I saved your police officers. I saved your teachers." We're still heading towards a new unemployment, a high unemployment rate. So they could have been working on an investment package that would have been not rushed and said we have to do high-speed rail in the first 2-3 years, but more long-term and figuring we're going to be in this for a long time and we need to have a strong economy when we come out.
If I was the Obama campaign, I would seize on your book today and say, okay, we have an 8.3% unemployment rate as of January. According to Michael Graybell's nonpartisan pros and cons assessment, we would have had over a double-digit employment rate to this day were it not for the stimulus.
That would be great if they would do that. I would love the free publicity from the Obama administration.
Would they be accurate?
Well, they would. I am very critical of things that did go wrong and could have been done better. You know, there's been talk about, well, the European debt crisis really, you know, trammeled the recovery that was happening. And in talking to economists, you know, working through the numbers, if the stimulus had been more front-loaded, we would have been in a stronger place to sustain those wins and not get knocked down for almost 2 years where we were sitting at 9% unemployment and nothing was happening.
Michael Graybell, reporter for the news organization ProPublica. He's the author now of Money Well Spent, The Truth Behind the Trillion-Dollar Stimulus, the biggest economic recovery plan in history. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Coming up next, Deputy New York City Mayor Howard Wolfson on Mayor Bloomberg's big check to Planned Parenthood this week and the mayor's proposed safety net cuts and other things from the budget. Stay with us.